everyone, and welcome to Curious Emotion, a podcast from Curious Motion. I'm Sam McCormick, and today we meet a cultural hero of Calderdale, someone who has been instrumental in raising the profile of the Calder Valley around the world, and who shows such dedication to shining a light on the stories of less heard people and places, Laura Johansson. Until recently, Laura was the Cultural Development Manager for the Cultural Destinations Project for Calderdale. If you aren't familiar with Calderdale, it's a borough situated in the beautiful South Pennines, about halfway between Leeds and Manchester. The central town is Halifax, and there are smaller towns making up the Calder Valley, including Elland, Sowerby Bridge, Hebden Bridge and Todmorden. Calderdale prides itself on being a place of beauty, resilience and kindness. It's also become a hotspot for TV productions, as you'll hear more about in this episode. This chat took place back in September, during Laura's final 2 weeks in her cultural destinations role, as she was preparing to go back to her main job with the Foreign Office. Laura is an example of how, in her words, ordinary people can achieve paths in life that may seem unattainable but are actually available to us given the chance. This chat was such a positive and fascinating experience for me, and I'm sure it will be for you too. Let's jump in. Welcome, Laura. Thank you very much for joining me. The first thing I just wanted to ask you about is you're moving on from your role now on the Cultural Destinations Project, and sort of what it's been like. So what's your journey with that role been like, and how does it feel, especially in this bizarre world that we're in? How does it feel to be moving on? I can imagine it's quite a big change.
Yeah, it feels really sad, actually, Sam. I've really, really loved this job. So just for a bit of background, I have got a day job as a civil servant. And so I have been doing this cultural destinations job on unpaid leave from that. And I took this job specifically to develop a few skills and, you know, wanted to develop some comms skills, some leadership skills, and this job fit the bill. And so the job that I'm doing at the moment, the cultural destinations job, is a project that looks to increase cultural tourism in Halifax and Calderdale. And so I do that in different ways. I work with a consortium of the local quality cultural organisations and try and build collaboration and cross-promotion and sharing of good practice and networks. I do some audience research and development. I do some things around shared box offices, and I also do a lot around PR, marketing, telling the story of the Calder Valley as a destination, working out what that is, building itineraries, that kind of thing. And I really love it because I'm from Halifax and Calderdale myself. I came back so that I could spend more time with my family because I like them. And,
that's good.
Yeah, it's about, I know, I'm very lucky. And also I was living in London, and I think, you know, it's just so hard, you know, being able to afford your rent and the commute. I love London, but it just got too much. So all of these things came together that, you know, I was ready to leave London. I was looking for a bit of personal development. My family were here, and this amazing job came up that played to things that I wanted to develop, but also was just an amazing job talking about a brilliant part of the country with organisations that I already knew quite well and really loved already. So, yeah, it was just one of those moments where the stars align.
Definitely. It's amazing. And I think sort of focusing on place and Calderdale particularly, it's such a creative borough. I've had a similar experience having moved here from London, and I'm not from here originally, but my husband is from nearby and I went to uni up this way, and there's a real sort of vibrancy here that is just I think it's quite unique to Calderdale in a way. And a really lovely way of organizations, artists and all of that kind of collaborating as well, which yeah, I've loved getting to know that, and you've been instrumental in helping me do that too. How long have you got left in your role? Just a few days?
Yeah, just a couple of weeks, but plenty to do.
So yeah,
the foot is on the pedal till the last minute.
Yes, I can imagine. So if in the past couple of years, what sort of impact have you found the project has had in terms of, I mean, I could go on all day about, you know, how culture is important and all of this sort of stuff, but it would be lovely to get your perspective on, you know, you've really delved into that and what that means for this particular part of the country and what that means for our communities as well.
Yeah. So the project was funded, and it was a pilot project from the Arts Council and Visit England. And it was an attempt to make the cultural and tourism sectors work better together because they've got so many mutual objectives. And I think that's worked incredibly well. But in terms of your question about culture and its role, it's fundamental. And I think there's probably four reasons around that, I would say. I think around well-being, around profile, around economy and around community, like you say. So I would say that in terms of well-being, I mean, we all know ourselves, don't we, how much better we feel after you've had a dance in the kitchen or you've sung a song or been to a gig or seen an amazing film. And all of that applies even more, actually, in lockdown. You know, the things that we've turned to are cultural things. Culture isn't always opera. It's, you know, Kylie in your kitchen. It's the same thing. And so that's anecdotal, and you know, we all know ourselves the value of culture and the arts, but I think there's been lots of research done. So I was really struck, for example, by some Arts Council research that said music therapy reduces agitation and the need for medication in 67% of people with dementia. So there's a growing body of research out there that shows that it's not just anecdotal, there is concrete evidence to show how culture and the arts and interaction can improve your health, your well-being and all that kind of thing. And then I think in terms of profile, that's something that obviously I've worked a lot on in my project. And I think that's really linked to civic pride and how people feel about the place they live in. So, you know, things like the Peace Hall on Antiques Roadshow, or, you know, Eureka is a national museum. Or when you see on telly, Last Tango in Halifax, Gentleman Jack, Happy Valley, you're seeing the place that you're from on the TV. It's really cool, and it makes you really proud of what you've got. And when you hear other people talking about your place and going, it's amazing, that is a really lovely feeling. But some of this doesn't happen by accident. And so the project worked really, really hard to change perceptions around the Calder Valley and to change the language around it as well. So as you say, it is a really creative place. And so that's something we've really focused on with national, international press. And we've really, you know, we've talked about what kind of language we want to use, and it's really worked. So, for example, the Times, in their Best Places to Live list in 2019, had creative Halifax on their What's Hot list. And that wouldn't have happened 2 years ago.
That
was hard work.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the Calder Valley, Hebden Bridge and its restaurants and independent shops was on the National Geographic Global Cool list for 2019. Above Hong Kong, above Oslo, above Indonesia. And again, that was a direct result. I can tell you the story of that and how that happened. And that came from concerted collaborative work to change perceptions and language around this place. And then that all kind of feeds into the visitor economy. I mean, for example, 43% of people who are moving will say that arts and culture are a really fundamental part of their decisions. So it's really central. And visitor, you know, tourism, I work in tourism, and tourism supports the year before last, it supported more than 7% of jobs locally, and it was worth nearly £350 million to the local economy. So it's nice to feel good about the place you're coming from, but you also want people spending money and giving you jobs, and we're doing that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and retail's moving away from the high street, so culture and experiences are increasingly important to keep places alive. And then finally, like you said, community. Again, researchers said that 68% of people feel arts and culture events are really important for fostering community feeling. Not only does interacting culture reduce loneliness, it makes you feel better, you can enjoy it. I think, you know, projects can say something about a place, and it can raise the profile of a place. So I think that was a very long answer that kind of said that culture is really at the heart of a place, a community and its economy. It's absolutely central.
Yeah, and it's just amazing when you look at those stats, isn't it? Because I think a few years back, we're not talking that far ago, you know, 2-3 years, those stats just, I don't know, I don't know that people paid attention to that quite so much. And I think lockdown has shown us that we really rely on culture and creativity and all of those things, and breaking that sort of barrier down of misconception and stuff it's vital, not just for, you know, one thing, but it's really tied into the health and well-being of people and the, you know, their experiences and their lives, which is, it's amazing. It really is. That is so cool about Hebden Bridge. I didn't know that. I bet they were really, really impressed. Above Hong Kong?
Yeah, Hong Kong, Oslo, Indonesia. But I think it was below Pittsburgh, so, you know.
Oh.
We tried.
I love it.
It's the Calder Valley. It talked about the Calder Valley and it talked about Hebden. Yeah, so that was a really big moment.
Yeah, that is amazing. And what you're saying about being proud of, you know, seeing your place on the TV, even though I'm not from here originally. When we moved, it was probably when the first series of Happy Valley had come out. And I suddenly realised, like, it's driving through Sowerby Bridge and stuff and thinking, that's the school. And that's and every time people come up now, I'm like, have you watched Happy Valley? And they're like, yes. Like, okay. And as we drive, we always take a drive to Hebden or something. I'm always like, that's where that was filmed. And I think they think I'm a bit mad. But it's lovely. It is a real sense of pride. And Sally Wainwright's work as well has been, you know, it's really incredible, isn't it? And so Gentleman Jack has been a really instrumental recent project, I suppose, if you want to call it that. Again, that's been another one where I've been like, how you watch this? You need to watch it to so many people, because there's a lot of layers to that story, I think. Can you give us a bit of background just on Anne Lister's story and then the story of the BBC programme of Gentleman Jack and how that came about and what that's kind of done as well, because that's had a big impact in terms of drawing people to this area, I think, as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So Anne Lister, for those who don't know, Anne Lister of Shibden Hall in Halifax. And so Anne lived from 1791 to 1840, and she was a really remarkable woman. So she wrote a diary of over 5 million words, at least a sixth of which was in code. And that diary, which detailed every single aspect of her life, financial, sexual, medical, business, absolutely everything. So this diary of over 5 million words is so significant that it's on the UNESCO Memory of the World Register, along with Samuel Pepys's, because it gives such a fascinating socioeconomic portrait. So yeah, Anne was a diarist, but she was also a traveller, a mountaineer, an entrepreneur, a businesswoman, and importantly, a lesbian. So this is something that has really struck a chord with people globally, particularly women and particularly lesbians, who are really excited to discover a history that they can own. And Anne is such a complex and rich person that everybody can find something they find fascinating. For me, it was the travel. So I grew up in Halifax. I worked in the Shibden Cafe as a teen, which is where I first learned about Anne Lister. And obviously, if you're a teenager, you hate the place you're from.
Yeah.
So I loved the story of Anne Lister, this woman who had got out of Halifax and seen the world. I thought that was amazing.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, Anne was a really remarkable person, and she's from here. It's a true story. And so when you're walking around in Halifax, when you're going to the Peace Hall or the Minster, or you're walking on Blackledge past HBOS, you are walking in her footsteps, where she went, the places that she talked about in her diary. It's absolutely incredible, and it's really magical. And Sally Wainwright, you mentioned, I mean, she's been interested in Anne Lister for a long time. She went to Shibden as a child. And the more, again, as with everyone, the more you learn about Anne Lister, the more you want to know, because you can't believe the richness of this character. And so she has had the idea for a drama based on the life and loves of Anne Lister for over 20 years, I think. But it's only recently that it's become possible. And I think actually it's a good thing it wasn't able to be done earlier, because I think now is really the right time in terms of Sally's profile. So her creatively and artistically being able to realise her vision and having the kind of clout to do that. But also, you know, there's in terms of LGBT rights, in terms of where lesbians are, in terms of the stories they want told and the visibility that they would like. You know, The Favourite came out. There's a lot of kind of cultural, very zeitgeisty at the moment. So Sally Wainwright finally managed to get this show done. It's an HBO and BBC co-production, so it's a global one. And it's based very heavily on the diaries. And so, as everyone will know, from April 2019, it was broadcast globally, and it has struck such a chord with people worldwide, particularly lesbians, as I say. Yeah, because my job is tourism and you were asking about the Gentleman Jack effect, I organised a really light touch Ann Lister weekend last July, just to see if anyone, you know, after it had been broadcast, see if anyone would pick up on it, if there was any interest. So, you know, I organised a little talk in Book Corner in the Peace Hall and agreed to chair it because it was only going to be, you know, 15, 20 people. Anyway, and we organised events at the archives and elsewhere. It all went completely berserk. I mean, absolutely insane. Things sold out in seconds. So my little event in Book Corner, we moved it to Town Hall, sold out within hours. Moved it to Minster, sold out within hours again at the Minster. We capped the numbers rather than do full capacity. And we had people who visited from Spain, Canada, France, the States. I mean, it was mad. And it was also quite overwhelming because I think people were really excited to come here to see, you know, it's a filming location as well as the real site for Ann Lister and her life. It was all filmed at Shibden. Most of the shots that were meant to be Shibden were filmed there. And they filmed around and about in Halifax and other places. And everyone was so, and particularly it was mainly women, mainly lesbians who came. I was very overwhelmed by the emotion of that weekend. Because there was an event at the Minster with Helena Whitbread and Jill Liddington, two of the local experts who have been working on Ann Lister for a while. Helena was the one who really kicked it off in the 80s. And they gave a talk and some readings, and it was really special to be in the Minster as well, which is Anne's baptised, she worshipped, she's buried there. And at the end, it was a Q&A, and a woman from the States stood up and said, "This is," and just gave this amazing speech about what this meant for women, what this meant for lesbians, how much they appreciated it, the welcome they'd had. And the entire audience was in tears. And then there was a standing ovation for Helena and Jill. And it was overwhelming. And since that point, this level of emotion and personal journeys that people have been through and what it means to come here on almost a pilgrimage for many people, it's quite a responsibility as a place to make sure that you're going to respect that and honour it and meet that weight of requirement.
Yeah, it's really incredible, isn't it? I read an article, I think, around that time. You might have shared it on your Twitter. That might have been where I saw it. But it was somebody's journey who she had travelled all the way from Bristol, just driven up just to go to the Minster and just to be in that space and to have that time to process, you know, what that means.
And I think, and again, when you look at the visitor figures as well, so for example, Shibden Hall, normally they used to get about 20,000 visitors a year. 2019 to 20, they had 60,000. And their capacity is limited, not only because, you know, it's quite a small space, so you need to manage that. And obviously recently with COVID and everything, that's become even more difficult. But, and again, yeah, looking at the Minster visitor figures, they're record-breaking. It's having a demonstrable and measurable impact. And again, it's just such a wonderful feeling to have people all over the world who are excited about coming to Halifax. I was listening to a podcast and they were planning their visit to Halifax and just saying, "Can't wait, we're so excited to visit Halifax." Again, you know, two years ago, someone in, you know, New Orleans who is super excited about their visit here. It's just the most fabulous feeling.
Oh my goodness, that really is amazing, isn't it? Just people all over the world, and it's sort of, you think about it and you think, yeah, this really speaks to people. And for me, it's really kind of, if you hear the story of Anne, you'd think, oh, okay, that probably will speak to people. But when you realise how much we all need these stories, it's really important that people are, you know, represented, their voices are heard, and culture is a way to do that, I suppose, in some ways. So there's another series in the pipeline as well, as I think. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. They were meant to be filming earlier this year, but obviously that's been postponed. But yeah, we're hoping they'll be back before too long. And again, they'll be using this area for the locations, which is absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, wow. I can't wait. I'm going to be obsessed.
So Sally Wainwright should be on commission, basically. What she's done for this is, incredible. So, I mean, we've got the gift of Ann Lister, and I mean, the gift of, we've got so many gifts here, and I'm happy to talk about them at length. But, you know, having the gift of Ann Lister and the gift of Sally Wainwright, I mean, other cultural destinations projects across the country just send me emails saying how jealous they are.
I love that. We don't want people to be, you know, jealous, but hey, we're happy for this. This is great. Yeah, it's really amazing. I think that's something that drew me to Calderdale when we were sort of thinking about where to move back into the north. And there is an energy here, I think, that's just so interesting. And to see this progression over the past couple of years and that level of impact and storytelling and, yeah, wow.
We did a tourism event with the tourism team at the council, and the producer of Gentleman Jack came, and he said that he wanted to see seasons of Gentleman Jack, which obviously would be totally awesome.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Excellent. That's great news.
So make sure everybody who is listening to this, and all of your friends and family, tell them to watch it so we can definitely.
Yeah, the more people who watch, the longer these things can keep going, exactly. The more impact they can make. And obviously, this is why I love arts and culture, and I am completely biased. That is my background. But this is the impact it can make. It can change people's lives. It can help them feel included. It can help them feel represented. It can address issues that need to be addressed. They are difficult issues, but they must be addressed. People, you know, we need to have these opportunities, and I think Sally does it in such a beautiful way. You know, it's that lovely storytelling, but that real representation from a really authentic place as well.
Yeah, and with a really strong northern voice, which is something you don't see as often as you would like to in national press and media and culture.
Just talk a little bit about collaboration as well, because I know there's a lot of artists and heritage sites and organizations and things here that, especially now with lockdown and COVID and everything, it feels like a really sort of the right time to really push collaboration and cross promotion. And I know that's something you have done massively.
I absolutely agree with you. More than ever, we need to be collaborating and outward facing. And I think the risk is right now that people will fold in and become more insular and focused on their own organisations and survival. And that is completely understandable. We need to be learning from each other and sharing best practice and sharing contacts and also working together to really spread the message about why culture and the arts are important and why they are so fundamental to our well-being and to our economy. That requires us all to be outward facing and to dedicate some very precious time and energy. And it's not easy. You know, I spent probably the first 6 months of my job getting out there, trying to meet people, trying to understand what people are doing. It does require time and energy and resources. In the Cultural Destinations Project, I have convened a group of local quality cultural organisations. And so what that means is, again, I've been out there talking to them, trying to understand what would be helpful for them from a collaboration point of view. I chair monthly meetings. I do lots of soft work behind the scenes, chivvying people along. But what we've ended up with after hard work is a group of people who have got a professional support network, professional network of people that you can ring up. And so there's that kind of soft side, which I think is super important. But then we also have the kind of harder side around collaboration, where it's about sharing joint upskilling. So we've run kind of collective sessions on how to use Google Ads, Instagram, that kind of thing. So what we also found, so we did prioritize, and we work a lot on cross promotion. And again, that takes a while because people initially, your initial response is, why would I promote a show at another place when I've got shows? But actually what you're doing when you're doing that is you're projecting something very friendly and open at your place and collaborative, which a customer reacts well to. Also strategically, you're projecting something really wonderful about you as a place to potential visitors, that this is a place where people work together and there's loads of amazing stuff going on. So why not come for a couple of days? So the real benefit of my role was that I was independent and I didn't belong to an organisation or the council or anything. And so what I could do was look across the valley at what was happening and curate that into different stories without an obligation to my employers. I could really curate in the best interests of the customer or the media story without an obligation. And that wasn't always popular. It was quite hard sometimes, obviously. But I think that it was really important to do that because people haven't got time these days. And you need to do the work for them. So, you know, what is the story? Where did this day? And I think you can translate that into the personal thing. Like you say, if you're an individual creative person, I think the thing that I've really learned from this past couple of years in this job is the starting point is what is your story and what is your unique selling point? What do you offer that others don't? And what do you want to say about that? Working that out. And then the next step, obviously, is who do you want to say that to? You're going to say it. And so for me on that score, it's really been about upskilling myself on digital things, because that is the future. And I was really, really behind on that. And I've learned a lot of YouTube. I've learned a lot of colleagues. I've had to put myself out there. I've made a lot of mistakes. But that was what I need to do. And I think probably that is something that a lot of independent shops and creatives and artists will need to move into that space.
Yeah, it's vulnerable, isn't it? It's really vulnerable. But vulnerability is the thing that moves, that makes things
change.
You
have to learn. You make mistakes when you learn. In fact, I only learn through mistakes and personal humiliation.
Me too. So now you're moving on from this role and back into your original role. And I know that has involved working all over the world. And I was saying in my little brief that I sent you, I saw your tweet saying that you'd worked in Congo and places like that. And I'm just completely curious about that. and it would be lovely to get your just what your experience has been like in different cultures. And can you tell us about Congo?
Yeah, I can. In the past, I haven't really talked about my career. So I'm in, I work for the Foreign Office, and so I'm in the diplomatic service. I've been a diplomat overseas, and that's why I've travelled. And I haven't really talked about it much, because in Yorkshire, you don't ever want to do anything where you kind of look like there might even be a hint of showing off. Because you'll get slapped down immediately.
Yeah.
Actually, I've been thinking about it more recently, and I think it is really important to talk about it for two reasons. One is that, you know, I'm from Halifax. I went to state school. I've been working since I was 14. I worked my way through university. I did French and drama, not international relations. And the Foreign Office advertised in a paper. And so I went through a very lengthy year-long interview process. And there aren't that many Northerners there. And I think partly that's because it is so expensive to live in London and no one works in public service for the money. But also I think a lot of people think that those kind of careers are out of reach. And so I just wanted to kind of say, I'm just an ordinary person who didn't study this, but I ended up doing it. And that is a path that is available to people locally. And I think that's really important, because you're hired for your skills, you know, and your interest and your curiosity. So I can speak another language or two, and I'm sure many people in this region can, you know, whether it's at home with your family or whether you've learned it at school or whether you've been traveling. So it's about skills rather than kind of knowledge. They trust you to knowledge if you've got the basics of skills. And then I think the other reason I want to talk about it more is that I think at this point it's really important that there is a wider understanding of how international relations work, because the world is globalized and there's no going back from that. A pandemic can happen in China and we're all affected. So I think we all have to, and I include myself, have to really work harder to understand how the international system works and the role that we want Britain and ourselves as individuals to play in it over the next few years. And so, yeah, that's why I'm very happy to talk about it. So, as I say, my stepmom saw the advert in the paper and encouraged me to apply. Did, and because I was quite relaxed about the whole thing, I think it went okay, whereas if I'd wanted it would have been a total disaster. But it has been an incredibly fulfilling job, working with really clever people, learning a lot. At the Foreign Office, you work on international relationships with other countries, and basically you're trying to get people to know more about the UK and to like us and to trade with us. So that's basically your job. My first posting was in New York. I was part of the UK delegation to the UN. I had the responsibility for humanitarian affairs. So that was about working in the Security Council and other places to try and make sure that the most vulnerable have access to humanitarian assistance and workers and that kind of thing. And that was incredible. And New York was amazing. And I didn't sleep for 3 years because I was working and playing too hard. Then I went to Copenhagen, where I worked on things like climate change and counterterrorism and other issues. I came back and then worked on consular. And so if you're ever on your holidays and you get into trouble overseas, it's people who work at the local embassy or high commission can help you out or give you advice. They can't get you out of jail and those kind of things, but because laws apply elsewhere. But it's, you know, that's the kind of work we do. And they, I think last year it was about 16,000 really serious cases of, you know, where bad things happen to people overseas. So that was very fascinating. Did a lot of work, for example, on, you know, British nationals who had the death penalty in the States, or people who got into trouble in Europe, lots of different, very interesting and often unseen. And that's where your passport fees go. Very good value. And always buy travel insurance. Please, 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 always buy travel insurance. And then I got a job in the in Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the capital is Kinshasa. And I also covered the other Republic of Congo just across the river. So that's a quiz question answer. The two capitals nearest each other in the world, the two, Republican, Democratic Republic of Congo. And a lot of people know it for its conflict. And it has had a really hard time. It's at the bottom of the Human Development Index, really serious poverty issues, sexual violence issues. But it is the most amazing country. I love it deeply. It is the most beautiful place you've ever seen in the world. The people are so warm and welcoming. And from one side to another, it's the same size as Paris to Moscow. So it's incredibly rich from an environment perspective, from political perspective. It's just a really fascinating place. And then after that, I went to Vietnam for a while, which also is a really magical place, and where I learned a lot about regional security and the rise of China and those kind of issues. So it's been a very mixed career, and you get to go overseas, which is very, very cool and can be very glamorous and very exciting. But it is also really hard, you know, having, like you say, to learn a new culture or a new language and just missing your family, getting mosquitoes all of the time. Those kind of things.
It's amazing. I went to Vietnam for my honeymoon, and we did a tour from the north to the south and then went over to Cambodia for a few days. And it's probably one of my most, I mean, I haven't traveled the world like you have, but I've been to a few places. That is, I think Vietnam particularly, there was something about the people there. It might be similar to what you were saying about Congo, that really open, welcoming, lovely energy from people. People smile at you on the street and just wave, and you know, and it's genuine and lovely. And yeah, Vietnam really struck me as a place that was full of all of that, and the history as well was fascinating. Hard, a very hard history, as many countries have, but fascinating. So will you be going abroad again? Are you going to be in the UK? Do you know what's going to happen when you start back?
Well, I think it's really hard at the moment to know even what's happening this week. So I'm basically taking a very zen approach, and whatever happens, happens. But yeah, I am starting back, and I'm going to be working on West Africa, which I'm really looking forward to. So yeah, so that will be fun. But, you know, to come back to your original question, working in the Calder Valley is the most enriching, rewarding, fascinating work. And I've enjoyed it tremendously. So I am excited to be going back to my job and learning new things. But I am incredibly sad to be leaving. But I'm from here and I live here. So, you know, I'll still have one foot in Yorkshire.
People like me are probably still pester you for like questions.
Please do. I'd be delighted if you did.
It's one of those things, once you're in the family, you never leave. It's like, that's
and I've got a number of commitments already lined up that I've.
I bet.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Yeah. But yeah, but I'd like to say a massive thank you for all the work you've done, because it's so amazing. The impact is incredible. And I bet you're going to go on and do even more amazing things. But yeah, thank you so much for everything you've done. And yeah, and for being on our podcast.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Sam, and best of luck with Curious Motion and with your future guests. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Wow, isn't Laura one inspiring human being? A big thank you to her for taking the time to chat with me. I'm sure you'll agree that her contribution to the lives of people in Calderdale and ultimately around the world has created a legacy of creativity, collaboration, and inclusion, which we continue to draw upon and be inspired by. I wish Laura all the very best with her work back at the Foreign Office, which I'm sure she's been incredibly busy with since our chat, and I hope we can catch up with her again soon. A big thank you also to the funders who have supported the launch of this podcast. That's the government's Coronavirus Community Support Fund, distributed by the National Lottery Community Fund, the Community Foundation for Calderdale, and the Adventure Programme. Curious Motion is a non-profit organisation, and this support, particularly during a pandemic, is vital to help us make a difference to the lives of our communities. Please make sure to subscribe via your usual podcast provider and please leave us a review. It will really help us to reach more people. We want this podcast to provide a space where you feel inspired, empowered, and reassured that you are not alone. So the more people we can reach, the better. Make sure you're following us on social media too. You'll find Curious Motion on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. All the info is in the show notes. And do let us know how you are and what you think. Until next time, a big thank you for listening. And remember, tune into your body, be kind to yourself, and stay curious. See you later.